Okay, good evening, Rabbi Osai. Tonight's discussion is a shaila that happens often, more often in different neighborhoods, more often when you deal with younger people, and more often when you deal with people who are trying to save money. So, for example, anybody who lives in an apartment in New York City will have this shaila more than people who live in houses in this neighborhood. And that's because if you live in an apartment building and your next-door neighbor or your upstairs or your downstairs has internet, and they could either secure their internet by putting on a passcode that only people in their house who know the passcode could access the internet that they're paying for, or you could have somebody who doesn't care to secure their line or to prevent other people from using their line, and they're very happy if the whole neighborhood uses it. So you could have an apartment anywhere in New York City where you could have four different people, your four neighbors, your right neighbors on your right, left, up, down, who could all access your internet. So,
how far away
from
the internet can
you easily, it depends on the walls, it depends on what's blocking that.
Manhattan
50 feet, 100, no, 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 a few, 100 feet, 200 feet, yeah.
I don't know.
Could be 50 feet, 100 feet, 200 feet.
Depends on your router.
Depends on the machinery you have. So the question is, we're not going to speak tonight about the permissibility of me being mafsid, Mr. Verizon, or being mafsid, Mr. Comcast or the other internet providers. I want to know if I own I pay for internet and I pay a monthly fee, and you happen to be walking by with your cell phone, with your smartphone, or you drive and you pull over right in front of my house because you need to use something on your smartphone. So could you just pull up in front of my house and use my open internet, or is that Geneva? Or is it something besides Geneva? So,
places like Starbucks.
So Starbucks, they allow you to do it and set up for you. That's part of the.
It's part of the service.
Well, yeah, that's why. I'll tell you a secret, Dr. Fink. Coffee doesn't cost $4.50 a cup. So you're paying for the ambiance and the internet.
Yeah.
So there's a very nice book that came out in the past year or two, two volumes actually, by a gentleman in Muncie. His name is David Lichtenstein, of Goldwicht's Machotin. And he has a book that's called Headlines, and it talks about contemporary cutting-edge halachic issues and a discussion of them. And he does a nice job with this. And another place where I got some sources is Rabbi Josh Flug from Florida, who puts out a lot of works for YU and is a researcher for YU, puts out a lot of shiurim, written shiurim. So those are the two places where I got most of the beginnings, where I started with the sources. And then from there we built and we saw what we could find. So Rabbi David Lichtenstein in that book called Headlines points out there are four sugyas to consider in this shaila, which I outlined at the very beginning, and then we'll talk about some of them at some length, some more, some less. So first of all, could it be considered gzeila if I'm going to be using your internet access, your internet service? So I never made a ma'aseh kinyan. I didn't do a mashicha, I didn't do a hagbah, I didn't do a chaldi. I never did a ma'aseh kinyan. So could I violate gzeila if I never do a ma'aseh kinyan on that which you're saying I'm taking this from you, I'm stealing your internet service? I never did a ma'aseh kinyan. Is that called gzeila? That's question number one. Question number two.
Why it's not a ma'aseh kinyan? You're using the internet.
Right, that's not called. There's no ma'aseh kinyan. I'm just typing. That's not a ma'aseh kinyan.
What do you mean you're just typing?
I'm just typing. There's no ma'aseh kinyan is. A ma'aseh kinyan is lifting, is pulling, is dragging.
There's no physical ma'aseh.
That's correct. Number two. Let's say we'll call you not a gazan, I didn't steal something, right? There's no ma'aseh kinyan, but maybe you're borrowing something without permission. We'll speak soon what the parameters, what the definition of borrowing something without permission. So if I borrow something without permission, let's say we assume that it's usur, it's called a gazlan, which is the conclusion of the Gemara. Does it mean that you're a gazlan, a shol shlomidas is a gazlan, meaning that if you borrowed without permission, something happens to it, you're responsible for whatever happens. What we call chiyav onsin, you become a shoel. You didn't have permission to borrow it, and you borrowed it. Nevertheless, you're responsible for anything that happened. Or is it more than that? Or is it actually something that's usur to do? Shalosh Lamidas Gazlan, meaning it's us to do, not just that you can assume responsibility. Number three, forget about the fact that there was no Maisa Kinyan. Does the concept of Gzeil even apply to something that's not physical? There's nothing physical that you're stealing. It's not an apple, it's not a pocketbook, it's not a wallet, it's not a dollar bill. There's nothing physical that you're stealing when you use somebody else's internet accessibility, internet service. And then finally, the last issue that one might have to consider is the sugya that the Chaz mentioned, zenene v'zelo chaser. You're using it, but you're not taking away his ability. He could use his internet just as well, even though you're going to be accessing whatever you want to access. And that's going to depend a little bit on the metzias. If you download movies, so if you download movies, which takes up a lot of information, that might slow down his ability. What? If you're searching for
it, slows down everybody else.
Okay, so it could be if a person has their own internet and if somebody else is just looking up their emails or something like that, the amount might be so, you know, 0.00, something that can't even be measured in terms of how it slows down, so it might not be meaningful.
How are you slowing somebody else down?
You're slowing down the speed. If there's a certain internet availability and somebody is sucking up a lot of the memory, it allows less memory to be able, less, I don't know if the word is memory, less stuff available for the person to use it. That's only if a lot is being used. Now let's begin. Those are the issues. Now let's start with one or two points about that first point. Could you do gzela? Does the concept of stealing exist outside of if I don't do an act to steal? So one place to start is there's a Mishnah in Bava Kamma that talks about dalet vehei. Kefel dalet vehei. So if you steal something and then tavach u'machar, the halach is only if you steal something. You steal a sheep. You steal an ox. You steal a cow. If you shecht it in the place where you stole it, you're not chayiv dalet vehei. In order to be chayiv dalet vehei, you have to have two separate steps. One is a gneva, which requires, by definition, as this Mishnah will say, removing it from the location, from the domain of the owner, the original owner. And separate and apart from that, you also have to afterwards shecht the animal. If you shecht it in the parameters or the domain of the owner, you would not be chayiv dalet vehei. What do you see from this? It seems that you're not. Look at the last line of the Rashi over there. Aval ganav tavach v'macher. After the italics in source number one, the second part of the italics. Aval ganav v'tavach v'macher b'shus apater. Why? Rashi says delo nase alav ganav. You hear that? You took something to steal it. You slaughtered it. But since you never schlepped the item out of the domain of where of the owner, you're not called a ganav. What's Rashi telling you?
You're not kefil? You're not chayav kefil?
No, it's not called gneva. It's not called gneva.
Oh, but they shechted behemah.
Yeah, you shechted somebody else's behemah, so you did mazik.
Are you mazik?
Yeah, you have to pay for it. Of course you have to pay for it, but there's no dalav, there's no hay, there's probably no kefil, because you're not called a ganav. Why are you not called a ganav? You took something to steal it and you killed it. Right. If you don't remove something from his rishus, that's not called a ganav. That's not called a gazla. Oh, that's on one hand. On the other hand, we have a Rambam. Rambam's going to talk about another case that he's going to, and here we're going to see what seems to be the opposite. There's a pasuk in the Torah that says, Lo sasig gvul, something or other. Re'ehu, thank you. You're not allowed to shift the borders, steal somebody else's land. Says the Rambam, in source number two, in Gneva Zayin Yir Aleph, Hamasig gvul re'ehu, V'hanichna v'hichnis mitchum chaver b'sotchum shalom. All you do is you go to your backyard, and you take your fence, or you take the marker between your property and your back neighbor property, and you just shift it a little bit. You shift it a few inches in the direction that you have more land now. Afil melo etzba, even a finger's width. In v'chazaka asa, if you did it forcefully, meaning without, you know, asking him for permission, hareza gazlan, wow. I'm sorry, if you did it in forcefully that he sees it, you're a gazlan. If you did it secretly, you're a ganav. That's a side point, whether it's gzela or gneva. But the point is, what did you do here? You stole land with what? I didn't steal anything. I didn't take anything into my hands. I didn't do it. All I did was I shifted something. I shifted a board. I shifted a marker. There used to be a yellow post-it, a sticky, that said, this is the border, all I did was I moved it a few inches. That's not a Maisa Kneva. Yet, Rama here is calling me a Ganav. So I'm a little confused. In the source in Bava Kama, a person is not called a Ganav until they do an act of Gneva. And yet here, when it comes to Hasagas Kvil, the Rambam is telling us that if I shift a marker, which is not a Maisa Kinyan, there's no Kinyan there, I am considered a Ganav. So when I'm using somebody's internet, I'm not doing any Kinyan. Is it called Gneva? Is it not called Gneva? I would say Fakert. There's no Maisa Gneva. Is there Kinyan Gneva? That we could talk about, but there's definitely no Maisa Gneva. So there's need nothing. There's no Maisa Gneva. No, that's the thing that's easier to discern. Maisa Gneva is an act of taking something that you had in your domain and I rip it out away from you, now it's by me. That's called a Maisa Gneva.
Perhaps it's Gneva without a Maisa.
If anything, that's what it would be. That's just Gzela of Gneva.
If the person is
not, there's no taking.
If the person,
I'm not taking anything away from you.
If the person is makpid on the internet, he will put the password, so I cannot log in.
That is correct. If he does care, you're saying a different issue. That's another way, the whole thing to think about. The fact that the person didn't secure his internet access by putting on a password means he's telling you, Gesundheit, hey, please use it. If that's true, there are a few reasons. This Rabbi Flug points out there are a few reasons why people don't put passwords on, either because they're generous,
right,
or
they're too lazy to log in.
They're too lazy to log in for themselves, but they don't want other people using it. They just don't want to have to type in a password every time. They don't want to forget their password. Or three, they're very non-technical, and they don't even realize what to do, that they have to do it, they should do it, that other people, right, they just don't. So, but you're right, it could be that would we follow Rove? If most people, you could assume, I walk into any apartment building in the country, I just walk down the hall and look at my phone and see where there's an open signal. And do I have the right to assume that that person, whoever left it open, wants to allow me to do it? Do I have the right to assume that? Maybe I do. Fine. Let's now talk about another question. So that was just trying to figure out, is there Gzeilus Adam Isaac Kinyan? It's not so clear. Now, let's talk about another thing. Let's skip to Shol Shel Amidas. Maybe in order to steal something, you actually have to rip it away from you, take it to me, do a maisa. But how about Shaila? You're just borrowing something. You don't have no intention to steal anything, but you're just using somebody else's thing. So here we have a Gemara Bava Basra, Peches Amud Aleph, in source number 4. Gemara says, what is the din of a shol shel amidas? You borrow something without permission of the owner. It's machlokas, marasav a shoel have, marasav a gazan have. We happen to paskin that the din of someone who borrows something without permission, right? If I take you ran to the bathroom, I need to make a phone call. So I take your phone, it's unlimited, it doesn't cost you anything. I take your phone and I call my friend, I call my wife, I call whoever it is. Calling your wife might be pikuach nefesh, so that might override all the other halachas. But let's say I want to call my friend, I want to call my stockbroker. That's what I mean. So that's why I must call my wife. So I want to call my stockbroker, my friend. So if I use somebody else's phone, I'm not taking anything away from him. I'm not letting him have any less value. By the time I finish this, he's not going to have any less value. He had unlimited limits anyway. So machlokas, we pass it, that's called the gazlan. But we have to figure out, what are the parameters? When is shol shel amidas considered a gazlan? Meaning, let's assume that if I use your internet, let's say I'm not a gazlan, but I'm just borrowing. Now let's think. Forget about the fact that I'm borrowing the internet access, but that's not physical. But you know what is physical? The router. The machine that's plugged into the wall that's shooting out the Wi-Fi signal.
So.
And I'm using that. I'm using his router. When I'm passing by somebody's house, I'm using that router. I'm using that router. Not only am I sucking out information from the router, but I'm even sending information into the router for the router to then send on to the rest of the world's internet.
Yeah.
When I send an email, how's that email being processed? I'm typing it on my computer. It sends it to the router, and the router now is going to send it to my my brother in Eretz Yisrael to whom I sent the email. Or to my office and wherever my office is. So I'm using the router. That's a physical item. I'm using it. It's true, I didn't take it in my hands, but I'm using somebody else's item. So is that considered shol shalom idas? I know permission to use it. Does that make me have a din of a gazlan? So let's see.
Is there a time limit on the shoel that you took it away for a minute from him?
No, there's no time limit. But you might be hinting to things.
He has access to it until even when you're using it. He has access to it, doesn't he?
Yes. Also? Yes. Yes.
That is correct.
Yes. At all.
So that's something that we have to think about.
Right.
Let's see. So let's see. Let's see one or two limitations to this din of shoel shalom idas. There's Ritva, who here is in Bava Metzia, different Masechta, Bava Metzia Mem Aleph. The Ritva is going to tell us a little bit about the parameters. When is somebody considered shol shalom idas? When is he considered a gazim? He's going to quote the Ramban to tell the following. Shol shalom idas. When is it a problem? Very important Ritva. You ready? B'tashmish shu ose yesh kilkul l'mamonim shel bailim. Only when using somebody else's item causes a little bit of a wear and tear is probably the best word. Then it's a problem. You're not making anything. It's not like you're consuming. It's not a well, there are two kinds in economics. There's durable goods and there's non-durable goods. It's not like you're eating up the food. It's not like I'm using up something that belongs to somebody else. I'm using your gas. I'm using your food. I'm eating something of yours. No. That's stealing. But shol shalom idas is that I'm using something that will get a little bit more worn. Or something that could get damaged by handling it or by moving it around. So if I borrow your car, if you go to Florida, and I say, "Oh, I know you're in Florida," and I quickly hotwire your car and take it for a little ride to the grocery store because my wife had the car somewhere else. So I didn't use up your car. I'll pay for the gas. So what's wrong with that? What's wrong is that as you use a car, there's wear and tear. There's a potentiality of damaging. And therefore, it's going to be called a shol shalom idas. But wait a second. When I use internet near your house, am I causing wear and tear on your internet availability? Am I causing any damage or potential damage to your internet accessibility? No. What about your router? Probably also no.
I have no access to your router. I have no access to your router.
You're not touching it. It's in the house. You're not touching it.
I can't imagine
it's using any. That's also a panel talk. Now the underlined line. If you can't damage this item, even if you're carrying it, and by router you're not even carrying it. Nobody would say that that's shol shalom idas gazlan, because you're not doing anything. Wow. According to this, if you're not doing anything, if there's no possibility that I could damage something, and I'm not using it up. If I'm not using it up, I'm not a gazlan. If there's no possibility that I'll damage it and there's no wear and tear, that's not even called a shol shalom idas. In which case, I didn't do a ma'aseh gzeilah, so I'm not a gazlan. Shol shalom idas, I am using it, but we see, according to this Ritva, a very tremendous limitation to the parameters of shol shalom idas, that if it's something that can't get damaged, or that doesn't have wear and tear, it's no problem.
It's no choice.
But here, I saw somebody raise an interesting point. I don't think I thought of this. I think maybe, I don't remember which of the two authors raised this point. But when you use somebody's internet access, although you're not putting any wear and tear on the router, what are you, yes, potentially causing them possible risk of damage? You could draw onto their internet some kind of virus. You could be drawing. There's a possibility. Not that it's expected. Not that you want it. Not that. But there's a possibility that you could be drawing. You could be infecting.
Unintentionally.
But it doesn't matter. The fact that there's a possibility of some damage that could be incurred. So we're going to consider. But that's very interesting because it's not a physical damage, and it's nothing to do with the. I wrote it on the bottom. Well, there's no damage that could be done to the router, but accessing the internet raises dangers to the network, the internet network. So is that risk going to be considered, what this Ritva was talking about, that nothing, no damage will happen to it? Is that called a kind of damage that we have to be worried?
So does it work that way? I have a computer. I'm using his internet. And if I get a virus on mine, it might go to his
I don't know enough. I don't know enough. Is it possible? I don't know.
The virus is on the computer.
What causes a virus? What causes a virus?
I don't know.
What is about that?
It's messed up your computer. You cannot use it. I don't know how. People can know how to do it.
When you're downloading something, you're using electricity, more electricity.
Uh-huh.
So if you're using, if it's true that when you download, you're using more electricity, as you found on Wikipedia?
Yeah, I know that, but there is virus.
On Wikipedia?
No, 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 this is someone complaining about Comcast.
Oh, okay, so I'm somewhere on the online. So as you're using the shul's internet and stealing from our shul, you're telling me.
I'm not using the shul. I don't think the shul has a Wi-Fi.
Okay.
It does have.
It's a secret. So you're telling us that you do this electricity when you download things from a router. So you're causing. So that could end up the whole shia right there, unless we see it's so minimal. I don't know. We'll have to. Okay. Right. So downloading movies is a lot. Okay. Let's move on. There's the Rav of Sanhedrin Rechevet started his career as a banker in Eretz Yisrael, and when the Badatz found out, I mentioned his name once or twice, and the Badatz found out that there's this guy behind as a teller in the bank or some other position in the bank, they realized that this person has more chosh mishpat than everybody else in Eretz Yisrael. They said, do us a favor, leave bank has something or other, and please become a dayan on the Badatz. And that's Rav Bloy, who's now the Rav of Sanhedrin Rechevet, of Ramat Eshkol, I think. And Rav Bloy has put out the most preeminent Svarim on Choshen Mishpat of the past generation, which is called Pesachei Choshen. Many volumes, 10, 12 volumes of black hardcover. And he just basically takes Choshen Mishpat and chews it up and spits it out in an easily manageable format, incorporating everything that was ever written on Choshen Mishpat. And he points out this incredible kula of the Ritva, which the Ritva was quoting the Ramban, this incredible kula of the Ramban, that if there's no damage that's going to be, that if you're using talking about something that can't get damaged, what's something, let's think, let's look around, what's something that can't get damaged? A chair. A chair? No, you can have wear and tear on a chair.
I was thinking weights.
Weights, that's a great idea. Weights, there's no wear and tear on a dumbbell, and it doesn't get damaged, and it's not going to... That we're going to talk about soon. We'll talk about that soon. So if you're going to, your roommate has dumbbells, and he's not here right now, you're in the dorm, and you want to start using his dumbbells, and you know, while you're sitting in the dorm, he's not there anyway. So that's Shol Shlomi Das. You're stealing.
On somebody's porch on a
we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that. It's a very good point. So maybe that, according to this Ramban, this Ritva's citation of the Ramban, you're not, so that can't be damaged, that doesn't have wear and tear shayach to it, so you should be allowed to use it without permission, and it won't be a dinner. Shol Shlomi Das. Terrific. Says Rav Bloy, he quotes this Ramban, and then he says, in the second line, after quoting the Ramban, which I underlined, that says, Amachne Ephraim, medayek medivri atosos, look at the third line now, shafilo eno miskalkal, even if it's something that won't be damaged, it's still aser to use. So he's telling us that even though the Ritva that we just saw would be lenient, there's another opinion. The opinion of Tosus is indeed that it doesn't help if it's non-damageable. And even a pair of dumbbells or a pair of weights would still be subject to the Isser of Shol Shlomi Das. So we lost that kula. What about something? Hold on one more moment. The Rabloi that quotes something, Sma. The Sma is one of the commentators on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, second to last line of source number 6. Uvisma, I underlined, has another leniency. B'davar she'en ha'baylim makpid al tashmisho, something that the baylim, we know they don't care. He's not, you can't be a gazlan. If somebody has if I'm in my house, and I know that there's a guy, I don't know, there's a, I have to think, what is the kind of thing that you still... Right, you have a little one of those little plastic children's cars in the front of your house on your grass, and the kids use it. The next kid use it. Your kids use it, and your kid is not using it. You see another kid from down the block, walking into your little, or you have a maybe a swing set in your bungalow colony. I don't want to say backyard, because then what are you doing on my property? But let's say in a bungalow colony, you have, there's a big open grass, you happen to put a swing set up. It's your swing set, but it's on the grass. So, you don't care if somebody else goes on it, you know. That could be an example, you're not makpid. That, he says, oh, that's not called shal shalom.
Somebody might damage it that way, though.
Yeah, but I don't care. So
if you're not makpid, you're not makpid.
If you're not makpid, I take
less. So if you do... Okay, so then he can't be makel.
So if you don't know, fine. You have to know that he's not going to be there.
That's correct. You have to know that he won't care. Correct.
Judgment.
So now, that idea might, let's see it inside, and we'll see something even more interesting. What if you're going to actually steal something that is very tiny? This was something that always bothered me. I don't remember if I ever mentioned it, but I remember when I grew up on Avenue J in Flatbush, there was, I don't even want to say, there was a certain ethnicity, but I don't want to mention which ethnicity it was, that as they would pass the fruit store on Avenue J in Flatbush, they would take a grape,
what?
And eat a grape, and walk by.
Steal.
It's stealing.
It's
one grape. It was like one grape. And then it was like, yeah, they do it. Like, they didn't even hide it. It was just, you walk through the size, you walk through the store, take a grape and eat it. So that is what I'm reminded of when we see the Shulchan Aruch, a very interesting kula in Hilchas Gezeila. Hilchas Gezeila is important to learn. I think Rav Volbe says that every frum Jew should learn Hilchas Gezeila, because Gezeila is an issa d'oraisa. If you don't know the parameters, you could be stealing without even realizing you're stealing, and it's an issa d'oraisa. It's not like a, you know, frumkeit and an issa d'rabbanan with a minhag. It's real d'oraisa. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Aser Ligzal in Hilchas Gezeila, Shinan Tastif Aleph. Source number 7. Also, ligzol, alashok, even a tiny bit, you're not allowed to steal. Whether it's from a Jew, whether it's from a guy, you're not allowed to steal from a guy. It's aser. Look at what I underline now. Vimhu davar, deleka man de kabid bay. If it's something that nobody would care about, shari. What's an example of something that nobody would care about? Kagon lito meha chavila, o meha gader, lachtsos boshinov. Let's say a person has a big bundle of wheat, or a big wall of wood, a big fence, and you want to chip off a little piece of straw or a little splinter to get out something from between your teeth, like a toothpick. That's something that nobody would know. The owner, no owner would be makpid about that.
Who said it? I want people taking things from my
if that's the case, then no. Then if the case is, then no. We makpid about it. Says the Shulchan Aruch, that's mutter. Halach l'maisa, it's mutter. Concludes the Shulchan Aruch, but va'av ze oser b'Yerushalmi mimidas chasidus. If you're holding mimidas chasidus, it's not the proper thing to do, but mi'ikar hadin, it is mutter. So what's an example of something that you take from somebody else, that vast majority of people would not be makpid? I would venture to say that if you are in class and you left a pen on your desk and somebody else used your pen, they stole that ink from you, didn't they? They're never coming back. You now have less ink in the ink canister. Or pencil, they took away that graphite from you. I don't want to talk about a pencil where you maybe are makpid because it's going to not be as sharp. Maybe the click pencils where it's always sharp. It's just a matter of how much graphite you have. So that might be a case where mi'ikar hadin, it's permitted because nobody, lekam at the cupboard bay, nobody would be makpid on the amount of ink that you stole from me by writing that, you know, you had to write that phone number down and use my ink. I'm makpid on that amount of ink. I don't know anybody in the world who would be makpid like that.
What happens if a bunch of kids do one after another? You're going to lose a lot of ink.
That's exactly the reason why the Yerushalmi says it's midas chasidus to not do that. Look at the Sman source number 8 that Rabbi Fein was mechavin to. What's the reason that the Yerushalmi says you shouldn't do it as a midas chasidus? Source number 8, hatam, kasav of Beis Yosef. Beis Yosef says hatam is because if everybody does it, what happens if everybody, any individual, nothing will happen? But if you have everybody doing it, then you'll end up not having a pen left. All the ink will be used up. And therefore, even a little bit would be a problem. So let's think. Let's talk about an internet connection. If I have an internet connection, let's say again, I didn't put a password on it. I don't know if that means that I don't care about anybody using it. But lemaisa, I have an internet connection. If you use my internet connection, is that, like, does it bother me? I don't even know. I don't even realize. Let's say it doesn't bother me. But what happens? Is there a midas chasidus to not use it? Let's think. If everybody uses it, then taka. If a lot of people would be using this at the same time, I would be slowed down significantly, or there wouldn't be enough room for me to download what I want to download. But wait a second. We're not talking about... That's only if it happens simultaneously. But if a lot of people come, one after the other. So if a lot of people come, one after the other, taking a piece of my fence, I won't have a fence left. If a lot of people come, one after the other, using my pen, I won't have a pen left. But if a lot of people come, one after the other, and use my internet, I didn't lose anything. My internet is equally there.
It depends if you have unlimited.
Let's assume you have unlimited, yes. Let's assume you have unlimited. At home, most people have unlimited. On their phones, they have unlimited, but at home, most people have unlimited, I think.
Yeah.
So this, could be that, if you live in Muncie, or maybe even in this neighborhood, there are not so many people around that... One or two people who are going to use it are never going to, you're never going to come to that svara of a lot of people using it up.
Does it minimize your use of the computer at the moment somebody else is using it?
Only if somebody else is using it to download something that has a lot of information, like a video. Otherwise, it's negligible. Fine.
Slow down the speed.
It slows it down.
Yes.
So that should be no good.
Now,
if you download it.
I don't know anything about this.
There's one other concern. So at this point, we have a lot of things happening at the same time. We said before that maybe this is not a gzela, but maybe Yishol Shalmi Das. We said, maybe Yishol Shalmi Das doesn't apply because there's no loss that could happen here. But we said, no, there are other Rishonim who don't hold from that leniency. Maybe we have a new leniency. The leniency could be that no one's makpid. But even that leniency, that no one's makpid, the Yishalmi tells us, although it's permitted, it's not mutter, it's not a midas chasidus to do. So let's see if we could find another. Let's see another issue that will come up. We're all familiar with the halacha in source number 9 that is paskin in hilchas tzitzis and hilchas tefillin. That if you forget your talis somewhere, you walk into shul, you forgot your talis, you forgot your tefillin, you're allowed to borrow somebody else's talis or tefillin without their permission. Oh, shol shalomi das have a gazlan. Why you're not a gazlan? Because it's a mitzvah, and therefore people are happy. I'm happy for you to do a mitzvah with my chafatzim. That's the Shulchan Aruch Paskins. Mutter, in Hilchos Tzitzisim and Yedalet, in source number 9. Mutter li tol talis chaveiro, and you can even make a bracha on it, as long as you fold it up in the right folds. On Shabbos, the post-Gemar Mekel, to not fold it up in the right folds, okay. Says the Ramah, so too is tefillin. Now, I just wanted to add this, because it's a complicated issue. I will also lilma misifri chaveiro. You're not allowed to use your friend's svarim, because they could get ripped. Fine. But that's a long discussion in the postgame. Old Svarim, modern Svarim, it's one that you leave out. But either way, it's not so simple. You could use somebody else's safe.
Why, you're not concerned about tefillin?
No, because tefillin are much more durable.
No, they're not.
When was the last time you saw a ripped tefillin?
Tefillin box can easily be damaged.
You're right. That's a good point. But not through the regular wearing of it, typically. That's carelessness with it, as opposed to siddur, which if you open up any mariv right around Baruch Hu or Shema, you'll notice, first of all, there are little rips on the bottom and plenty of ripped pages.
Also because people are careless.
Yeah, but just the commonality, the number of times, the
intensity.
But the damage,
intensity is
of feeling is much more serious.
That's true. But here we have an interesting chumrah of the Bach. 5 words in source number 10. Says the Bach, on that exact same halacha that you're allowed to borrow somebody else's talis or tefillin without permission, says the Bach, this heter, lo hitiru misha mitzvah ella, b'akrai, temporarily, here or there. It's not like I don't have to buy my own talis because every day I come to the 7:45 minyan and there's a guy who leaves for the 7:41 train. So he is at the 7 o'clock minyan, so I could always use his talis with tefillin every single day. He doesn't even know. He doesn't even know. All he knows is that every day his talis and tefillin get folded a little bit. He's always wondering, is that how I felt? I thought I folded a little differently. He doesn't, he's too busy anyway to remember. So I picked the perfect guy. He always makes the 7:41 train. I come at 7:45. So, no, says the Bach, no, this heter, even for a mitzvah, is only if it's temporarily. So let's apply this now. Let's say I have my next door neighbor. I want to save money. I'm on a low budget, a shoestring budget. Why should I pay for internet? My next door neighbor in the apartment, my apartment next door, I had this Shiloh. I had this Shiloh on Washington Nights. I had this exact Shiloh. Somebody said, why should I? My next door neighbor says he doesn't mind if we use his. Well, that's, he didn't mind. That was a shout out. Are you stealing from Verizon or Comcast? It's a different question. But if you know that your next door neighbor has internet, why should you pay $40, $60 a month? It's a lot of money. It's $500 a year. It could be more. $700 a year. If you know you could just consistently use your next door neighbor's internet services. So says the Bach, even if you say there's no iser, because, well, that's for a mitzvah purpose. Let's say I'm an executive director, so all my emails, all the work that I do online is to raise money for tzedakah, or I'm a rabbi, and I prepare my shiurim, and everything I'm doing online is all, you know, to pass in the shadows for my congregants and to write my shiurim. So I could say it's all mitzvah. Therefore, I could use your router because it's all mitzvah purpose. But if I do it consistently, do we pass like this, Bach's Chumrah? Let's look at the Mishnah Berurah. Says the Mishnah Berurah in Hilchot Tzitzis, yep, Davka Be'akrai, Aval B'Kviyas Asur. If you do it consistently, it's a problem. Fine.
How much is that?
Doesn't tell
us. Once a week.
Second line of the Mishnah Berurah, he quotes the Prima Gadim. Another thought. Says the Prima Gadim, the B'chol Gavnei. So the Prima Gadim makes a very simple point. Let's say there are certain cases that might be mutter. Right? You could borrow a talis without permission. But hello, if you could simply call the fellow and say, do you mind if I borrow your talis? The Prima Gadim says, if it's something you could clarify whether he gives you permission or not, you definitely are obligated to inquire, to ask him, and not rely on the chazak, oh, I'm sure he would let me because it's for mitzvah purposes. No, if you can inquire, you must inquire. And certainly, if you know that he doesn't want you to use, he wouldn't be appreciative if you use his talis, his tefillin. Certainly, it wouldn't be okay. The final issue, I don't think we'll have time to talk about all the issues, is zenen evzelochas. So we're not going to go through the sugya. That's a very long sugya, when it applies, when it doesn't apply. But the punchline of this sugya would be that if I'm, when I benefit by using your item, and you lose absolutely nothing, so I'm benefiting, you're not losing anything, so maybe, so you certainly can't charge me for using it, but could you say, if I used it, you can't say, oh, you have to pay me for, let's say somebody, I used somebody's internet. He didn't lose out, I gained, but he didn't lose anything. It's not like he was using it or up, I didn't slow him or anything. If he found out that I used his internet, could he say, I want to charge Rabbi Orlian, I'm going to charge you 25 cents because you used my internet. So halacha is, zenenev zeh l'chaser, you don't have to pay. However, it's true that I don't have to pay him if I did use it, but does he have the authority before I use it to prevent me and say, I know I'm not going to lose anything if you use my internet, but I still don't allow you to use it?
Absolutely. Of course.
Yeah.
So that... Tosis does say, in source number 13, that even if you hold kof and amida stone, what is kof and amida stone? That we'll force somebody in a case where no, you're not losing anything. Somebody else wants to use it. What's the problem? We're going to force you to allow that? No, but if you did say, forcing just means, I guess, that we don't make you compensate afterwards. But if you want to prevent it mitchila, you want to prevent it a priori, you do have the right to prevent somebody from deriving benefit from you, even though you would not be losing. Let's jump down to the last point, the bottom of page 3, Davar She'eino Mamash. What about the fact that, what are you stealing, what are you using? Let's just not talk about the router right now, let's talk about the service, that you're, the Wi-Fi itself, the internet usability that you're using. What is it? The waves? You're using the waves? Which wave? Where is it? Is wave? Is it a mass? Is it mass? Is it energy? I don't even know what it is. So what's the status of stealing? Let's say somebody has an oven. My next door neighbor is baking cakes. Better yet, I live next to Angel's Bakery. Not mamish next door. I want to sell. I'm going to have a great business. I have a great business. Did you ever take the bus through Givat Shaul to Har Nof, through Givat Shaul, past Angel's Bakery, and you get to that corner, and you inhale. You smell. Oh, that's heaven. Mamish heaven. Yeah. So you have a great idea. You're going to market to these officially, theoretically Zionist Americans who don't actually have any interest in ever living in Israel, but they want to feel like they're Israel, like they love Israel. You're going to bottle the air right outside of Angel's Bakery, seal it in a bottle, sell it to these rich Americans for like $4.99 for a bottle of Angel's Bakery smelling air. And these Zionist Americans will pay $4.99, open up the bottle, smell, and they'll feel all warm and fuzzy about loving Eretz Yisrael.
The air is hefker now.
So the question is, I am making money, I'm stealing their smell, right?
It's hefker.
Hefker, is it hefker? Is it not hefker? I don't know. Let's look at the Gemara Pesachim. Says Gemara Pesachim, Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yishim, and Pazim, and
the
Bram.
The Gemara the bartender says if you go into a Chanus Bosem, that you would come out, there's an ethereal, what's the name, just being in the
that you'll come out smelling nice.
Uh-huh. And the bartender of Nord says that it's comparable to walking into a perfumery.
You walk out smelling perfume.
Get something out of it.
Okay.
So it must be that it's okay to benefit from.
I mean, that's what happens. The question is, could you? Are you allowed to go in if that's all you want to do? You don't want to buy perfume. You just want to, you know, get. Okay. Let's look at this Gemara. Says Gemara Pesachim. Kol, umare, vireach, three things that are all ethereal, all amorphous, all non-physical. Kol, mare, reach, top of page 4. Top of page 4. These three items that are all non-physical items, sound, appearance, smell, ein behem mishum me'ila. If you steal, as if it were, these items, that would not violate me'ila. As Reb Chaim Brisk learns, Me'ilah is just stealing from the Beis HaMikdash. It's halacha of stealing. So these are not subject to stealing from the Beis HaMikdash. What does it mean? Says the Rashi, Kol shel klei shir she'en hektesh. If you derive benefit from the musical playing in the Beis HaMikdash, you derive benefit? That wasn't called deriving benefit. That is violating using the Beis HaMikdash. Reach, you inhale the delicious smell of the Ketores. Is that benefiting from the Beis HaMikdash? No, that's not a problem. All of these things are not can be considered a violation of Me'ilah. And based on that, presumably, this is presumably the source for the famous Rambam, the Rambam who talks about blowing the shofar, that's a stolen shofar. And the Rambam famously says in source number 18, that guess what? You are Yotzei with a stolen shofar. What do you mean? I'm not Yotzei with a stolen lulav. You're not Yotzei with a stolen, well, sukkah is a good question. But how can you be Yotzei with a stolen shofar? The answer is because you're Yotzei with the kol, and you can't steal a kol. You stole the shofar, but the mitzvah wasn't the shofar. The mitzvah was the voice, and a voice can't be stolen. Where did the Rambam get this from? Presumably, he got it from the line we just showed you, learned together in Gemara Pesachim, that kol is not subject, voice, sound, is not subject to stealing. If that's the case, maybe we could argue that the same thing. You're worried I'm stealing your internet connection, your Wi-Fi? Wi-Fi is not something that you could... what are you stealing? It's just like stealing stealing light or stealing sound or stealing smell. That's not subject to stealing. And therefore, on that perspective, that might not be called gzela. I want to finish off with a very important Maharam Shik. This Maharam Shik has become exceedingly important in the past 20 years because in the past 20 years, there's an area of law that has probably more than doubled, tripled, quadrupled, hundreds of times become more significant, and that's the area of intellectual property. Why? Because all of a sudden, intellectual property has become the main breakthroughs in science are not just inventions, they're ideas. The ideas, their algorithms, their programs, their software, they're things that are not physical, that it's not like I want to buy a hammer or a car. I'm spending millions of dollars on a software or an app. And that's where the real, that's a new area. is that considered stealing? And it's more than that, because the whole shaila of downloading, people ask the shaila all the time. I want to download, is it mutter to download? It says this thing is copyrighted. But I don't want to pay for this program. Can I just download it for free? Even though, can I just copy it? Somebody bought a program, my next door neighbor bought a program, I don't know, Microsoft Word or whatever other program that for $80. I don't want to pay $80, I could just copy his. Yeah. So what are you taking? You're not taking any item. You're not taking his disk, you're using your own disk. You're just copying the information from one disk to another disk. From one computer to another computer, you're just taking information, downloading the songs. This Maharam Shik is the source that's one of the important sources in that gigantic sugya. Is there such a thing called intellectual property? Could you copy textbooks? Students have this question all the time. My friend bought a textbook. Textbooks, you know how much textbooks cost? Could be $120 for a textbook. $80 easy for a textbook. So his friend will get a textbook and he'll take pictures with his cell phone of, you know, a few hundred pages. Do you know that online there are websites that have done that for you, and you could download an entire textbook and you can save $100 on every textbook. You have four classes, it's $500 every semester. You can just go to this website and they did it for you. They already took pictures of all the textbooks that you might need, and okay, you won't have a physical textbook. You just look online and look at whatever page you need to read and read it on your computer. That's all a question of stealing intellectual property. You didn't steal any object, but the ideas, the information, the graphic design that was designed, the program is what you're using. So is that okay? So this shaila was asked in the time of Maharam Shik, not so long ago, of somebody who stole somebody else's Chidushei Torah and called it his own. I heard the Gevaldige word from so-and-so, and I went and I said, I want to share with you, I just had a tremendous Chiddush, and he passed it off as his own. So that person who passed it off as his own, should we, you know, passel him as a sofer? Should we passel him as a shochet? Is this guy an upstanding Jew anymore? He stole another Yid's Divrei Torah, Chidushei Torah. Okay, let's see what he says. Is that stealing? I guess, I don't know if lying is enough to make you an invalid. If it's not for money, I don't know if lying, if not for money, is enough to invalidate you to be a sofer, a shochet. Good question, not sure. Maybe, perhaps not. But look what he paskins. I underline just the main point in the third paragraph of this very important, really fundamental tshuva in the sugya of intellectual property. The Fimai de Kaimolan, I underlined it. De Ein Geza Bekol, there's no stealing sound. De Havidavish Ein Bamamish, it's ethereal, it's amorphous, it doesn't have any body to it. Kishem Damrin and Kol Umar Verech Ein Bamishim Me'ilah. Just like you don't violate Me'ilah, you didn't steal from the Beis HaMikdash, so too it's not considered stealing from somebody else. If that's the case, Kol Shekin Vazeh, all the more so in this case, Sheomer Chidushei Torah, Shetamad Chacham Acher Chidesh, Ruhu Omer Osam Bashim Atzmal, Lo Chashev Gezel. If you could steal sound, and you could steal light or appearance, and you could steal smell, you could steal ideas. That's the conclusion of the Maharam Shik. And therefore he says, if you heard an idea from somebody else, it's not nice. Yes, in the last paragraph he says it's not right, it's a lie, especially when it comes to Torah, you should be nice and sweet and honest. But is it? And you should bring the geula. It's a beautiful maila to bring the geula. But is it gazel? It's not gazel. That's not called gazel. That's okay. Good. It's lying. Okay. People lie. But it's not gazel. It's not gazel. No. What? Sorry.
He stole something else in the Torah, but it's
really not. Yeah, he's getting a $400 honorarium for speaking.
At the end, he says it's also.
At the end, he says it's not Gesel.
He says it is.
No, he doesn't.
It's Mishum Sheker.
Okay, it's not Gesel. He says it's not nice.
Gnei Mestas.
Okay, you shouldn't do it for other reasons. It's not called Gesel.
Gnei Mestas. He's a gunner.
Okay, but all the other cases I told you, when you're downloading, when you're copying things, when you're taking ideas where there might not be Sheker involved, and there might not be Gnevas Das. So this Maram Shik might hold those things are mutter. So according to this, if we apply this to this idea to using internet, if you're using something that's not physical, that's not subject to Gezel. So we analyzed, I'm not coming out with the maskana, but I think we covered a lot of the different aspects of using the router, shal shal midas, does it, are there leniencies, are there not leniencies, is it gezel of the service itself, maybe not. So we should all be zochet
to have our own internet.
Figure out what to have our own internet.
Moif good. Moif good. Rabbi, my life good.
Can I say something more?